A three-man booth today. Not our usual three-man. In fact, it's a brand new starting three we have here. Jack Purdy is here. Jake Grant is here. But we have Jackson Caudill here from, what is it, Fan Nation with Sports Illustrated, all
Yeah,
Georgia
Fan
Tech.
Nation. Well, All Yellow Jackets is the Georgia Tech name for it, but it's on Fan Nation, a part of Sports Illustrated. Really long title, but that's it.
It is the most thriving portion of Sports Illustrated, if you had to rank the thriving portions of Sports Illustrated. So I'm glad you get Jackson puts out a ton of good stuff all the time, and it's at everything. We sit together for football games, and it's a blast every time. So Jackson, we're so glad you're finally here. I feel like it's been way overdue.
Yeah, like I didn't think I was officially a part of the Georgia Tech ecosystem until I came on here. Like I've been doing this for 2 years now, and yeah, I got hired March 2022. Like I'm officially in this thing now.
That's awesome. That's well, hey, we're honored to. Good for you to
Congrats.
say that. And hey, I mean, I just got on here about the same time, so we're parallel tracking to some extent. Let's start before we get to dive into the sporty things. We mentioned the yard sale was happening. I put a tweet out about like, hey, what'd y'all buy? I am currently wearing one of my Lotton jerseys that I bought. Jake, I know you were thought about going to the yard sale, but then ended up not going to the yard sale. But this was such a cool event. I talked with Danny Carnac a bunch during it because like they've had like past like, hey, staff, come just take all the crap out of here that we just don't want anymore. But this time they like sold it. And so for those that weren't there, they had like all of the like the that first line of Adidas uniforms we got under Collins. They had all those uniforms in basically any number you wanted with some patches removed and whatnot. They had women's basketball jerseys. They had old Russell Athletic gear with just no logos on it. Just like that
Ooh, that's a little spooky.
baseball jerseys from the Russell era, like stuff I didn't even recognize. And then if you needed cleats, I had cleats too. But it was such a cool event. I wish you were there, but it was a fun thing.
Yeah, I mean, I was closer than I usually am, but had some family in town and of course was beholden to their schedule. But I think I've got enough Georgia Tech related apparel, and I can always buy more with our fine sponsor section103.com. I'm getting the plug in early. Of
Look at him go.
course,
Look at him go.
it's good to be able to grab some of the merch that you see folks wearing it, and it's one of those things where it's like, oh, I wish they would just sell it. Is this
Right.
what I had
Yeah.
in mind? Maybe not, but it's and I think that the turnout was really good to see, just getting people in the building. It looked like it was a little more turnout than the last one of these I can remember, which was solely track and field merch. But then
Yeah,
again, I think I got a pair of pants for
that.
$5 at that one. So, there's a yin and a yang to it.
Yeah, I do know that some of the tech staff got access to this the night before to the general public got it. So I think there was a bit of like the really, really like good like polos and pants and stuff that did not make it to the general populace as probably should be the case. But yeah, it was crowded. It was crowded the whole time. Like we hung out. We like eventually we just me and Akshay just kind of hung out there for a few minutes and just kind of watched people watch. And it was a fun time. There were honeycomb football helmets for sale for a cool $1,000 if you wanted the honeycomb shell. But we did not go in together on that. My last note before we get into some construction stuff, which kind of bleeds into actually, no, I'm gonna save this for the spring football section. I'm gonna put that there. Quick construction corner. If for those that were at the spring game, you probably saw all of it that's going on because my goodness, was campus busy on Saturday. Sidewalks all over the place getting redone. Bobby Dodd Stadium, that corner that they're redoing for the Fannin Athletic Center, that's slowly but surely knocking down bleachers and stuff like that. The Clint Castleberry, I guess, name on the on that whatever that part of the grandstands there, like the 19's partially knocked out by something that hit it at some point. So there are signs of damage now, and there are now concrete pillars coming out of where the Scheller Tower building is going to be. So things are going up there.
Yep. I did notice that on Saturday and Sunday that the pillars were up, and that's always an exciting thing to be above ground level, because it's that much closer to reality. So exciting to see, and I don't know. It doesn't feel real until there's something coming out of the ground, I guess.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate this point that they're just like, we're just gonna get everything done as fast as possible. Like all of the cityscaping, it's gonna get done. They're gonna do this, finish the cycle track and everything. Like they're just you gotta finish it at some point, so you may as well go fast. Jackson, this has been the perpetual existence of Georgia Tech, whether it's me and Jake who didn't have a student center at the end of our times at Tech or whatever going on. There is always some
Or a
massive issue.
library.
Or no library. There is a yeah, I went through the I went through having no library and then no student center when I was at Tech. This is what happens. There's always something getting built and something getting torn down. So hopefully your transportation to campus hasn't been too harmed by this.
Well, I was just going to say, just my only construction note is like, just I was at practice every day. There was media viewing allowed, and it was like you have a different setup for post practice press conferences and everything. And you got
Yeah.
people through elevators. Like it was strange, but it was something. Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Where are they doing those post practice pressers now that Edge Building is decommissioned?
So it is in the media entrance at Gate 6.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. That's.
Like right where you get in, like I know, yeah, I'm sure y'all know what I'm talking about,
Yeah,
but
yeah, yeah.
got the two elevators right there, people coming in and out. Like, yeah, it was something.
Interesting, interesting. All right, well, let's talk about the act that particular building. We had the spring football game. Before the game started, well, before the game started, there was video. Dylan Leonard put out a video that Brent Key, man of the people, I must say, went through every frat and knocked on people's doors to make sure they were awake and ready for the spring game. And talk about it. That warmed my heart. And I ran through multiple theoretical brick walls for him as soon as I saw that that happened. Jake, would you like to be wakened up by Brett Key on the morning of the spring football game?
Yeah, I mean, I say this as somebody who was a big proponent of sending the marching band and the rec club to make wake up freshmen for the freshman cake race. It's the same thing, but different, right? The same side of a different coin. But yeah, I mean, absolutely, I'm here for it. If there's any time to do it, it might as well be the day that he doesn't have to coach a versus a live opponent, and you still get the nice the clicks and the halo from that. So I thought it was super neat. I was very glad to see it.
It's good to see us, you know. Or, I mean, he's of this. Like, he is a tech guy. Like, he kind of has like the credibility and like I guess maybe the green light to just kind of do more stuff like this. If it was not Key, I wonder if there's like just not that assumption of like, oh yeah, I can just go do this. I'm just gonna go down to whichever building and just say, hey, wake the F up. Like, we're doing this today. I don't know. This might imagine Willie Fritz doing that. I don't know. It would have been a little awkward.
I don't know. It takes a certain demeanor to pull that off. I can't say that I would have that demeanor either, but to each their own, right?
No, I agree with you. All right. So this game, it's called the Golden White Game. They named the team Swarm and Wreckem. I don't know which team wore what color. I just know Haynes King wore one color and Zach Pyron wore different was on a different team by the time the game started. Swarm beat Wreckem 27-24. Jackson, this is where you come in. Very key here because me and Jake were largely at softball this weekend. So this is why you're here. So some highlights before we get going. We know there's about 12,000 people there. Crowd looked really good, at least for the few possessions I was there at the beginning. First team offense did offensive things. It's a spring game. Defense is not exactly try. It's closer to an all-star game, less than a real football game in that regard. And Aiden Burr hit a 62-yard field goal, which would have beat the Tech record by 7 yards if it was in a real NCAA-sanctioned game. And then there was a couple interceptions there. So, just in general, tell me your overarching thoughts. What did any? I mean, as we talked beforehand, nothing's supposed to really stand out of a spring game, but of the things that were important to draw out, what'd you draw?
Like, I thought it was the depth at some positions. Like, I thought the quarterback depth overall was pretty good. Like, Haynes King, he did have that one interception, but he looked pretty effective overall. It wasn't like he was going to be asked to do a lot of stuff. Like, we know who Haynes King is. We know how good he is.
Yeah.
It's like, we don't need to see him go out throw for 500 yards in a spring game. So I wasn't really as dialed in on quarterbacks. It's so much different than last year where that's all anybody cared about. But
Right.
now Zach Pyron come in there. He looked pretty good. He got the Hail Mary to Chris Elko right there at the end of the first half. And like, what a day Chris Elko had. Like, the wide receiver position is pretty stacked overall, but I mean, he wound up having 140 yards.
There you go.
Yeah. Bailey Stockton also a really nice day. Like, some of the depth guys at receiver as well came in and did really nice. Zion Taylor, a redshirt freshman who played at Norcross High School his senior season, he caught a touchdown. It was good to see Leo Blackburn back out there. He caught a touchdown. Malik Rutherford, he caught a touchdown. I mean, I'll also say this, when I was, on my podcast the other day, I was like, I'm not going to come away with any just overarching takeaways from a spring game. Number one thing is I want
Yeah.
anybody to get hurt. Like, everybody come away from this game healthy.
Yep.
That was the case. Like, I know Jackson Long got hurt in the first scrimmage, tore his ACL, tight end, he's going to be out for the season. But everybody, like, this team is largely healthy going into the summer and into the fall. I'm getting to where I can't contain my excitement for how good I think Jamal Haynes is going to be this year.
Oh boy, yeah.
Like, just that first drive, like just the cutting, making guys miss a touchdown, that was it. Because I asked Brent Key, I think it was after the second scrimmage, I kind of asked him about the depth at running back overall. He's like, well, you know, I didn't play Jamal Haynes that second scrimmage. Like, I know how good he is. Like, we're trying to find the other guys. And that was pretty much what they did Saturday. And I still think that's a question that needs to be answered. Like, not in a bad way, but like something to figure out. Offensive line was solid. And again, spring games are not built for defenses. Like, it's just not you need to be very concerned if a defense goes out there and holds a offense to 100 yards in a spring game, because then you need offensive questions answered in a big way. But some turnovers were created. Obviously, you know, you're not going to sack the quarterback. You're not going to hit the quarterback. So there were some times when the quarterbacks ran outside the pocket. It's like, okay, what are you going to do? But I still think there's definitely some questions that need to be answered there. But there was also some guys, Warren Burrell at corner, the transfer from Tennessee. I thought the linebackers largely looked pretty good, whether it was Eford, Jackson Hamilton, Tajay Butler, the true freshman. Like, I've been high on him since he signed there. And then EJ Lightsey, the transfer from that other school, you know, he looked pretty good as well. So definitely some potential playmakers on defense, but again, it's, you don't really know yet.
Right. I mean, there's still some familiar names. I mean, Burrell, he got that interception, which hopefully that was the one that was tipped, I believe, right?
That was the one in the end zone. Case Adams got the first
Case
one.
Case got the tipped one. Okay, gotcha.
Case Adams got the first one.
Gotcha, okay. I'm going to revisit this field goal by Aiden Burr, because the kicking did weirdly become a real storyline. Initially, for one, that kick, no one was rushing him. It was a free shot at the goalpost. Was it you? Or no, it was Kelly that tweeted about how they were originally going to punt, called timeout, and then put him, and then Aiden gave him the death stare to put him out there, and then nailed it and would have hit from 67 probably as well.
Yeah. Somebody asked Key, like, hey, if you were playing Florida State, like in the first game, are you doing that? And he said, yeah. Like, you know, we called timeout. We thought about it. I saw Aiden Burst staring me down, and I'm like, all right, we're going to do it. And it paid off. And he almost hit a 59 yard.
Right. Yeah.
So I've got a question for you guys.
Yes.
And I will say my one takeaway that I had from the game was this, a hot take that I'll save for later. And this, Aiden Burr gave me a pleasant surprise from a spring game. And I don't think, he's played well last year, but I don't think I've ever walked away from a spring game going like, ooh, I am now more excited because I saw something I wasn't expecting like this. So in honor of the, well, theoretically, longest field goal that's been made, I guess, on the field while people are watching, if you will, I want to play a little game with you guys. It's called Harrison, Scott Sisson, or Other. Who holds the record for the longest field goal made in Georgia Tech history in a game? Harrison, Scott Sisson, or Other?
I know it's not Harrison because we were talking to Aiden Burr post-practice, and somebody asked who had the longest one, and Andy Demetra said something about it, but I can't remember. I just know it's not Harrison.
I have had the text, the Rambling Wreck recap of the game up, and the name David Bell is brought up here, but it says that there's three jackets with the 55-yard record. So is it all three?
Yeah, it's other and other. So E.O. Wheeler, Ron Rice, and David Bell. I just felt like it was worth mentioning. The David Bell one was versus the school out east, which is probably why it's the most remembered of the three of them.
It does say it's the most recent one as well, which
then
means it's been nearly 40 years since we hit a field goal in our game longer than what the heck? My goodness, Harrison,
because again, and in your head you're gonna think, oh, it was that Scott Sisson kick against UVA in 1990. Oh, it was that Harrison Butker kick in 2014. It was neither of those. So anyway,
well, is there a prop bet for this, for Aiden Burr 56 yarders or more? Because I want that bet now if it's out there. Just at one point, Gavin Stewart also missed a shorter field goal and promptly entered the portal after the game, which means, Jake, we must fully retired the Gavin Stewart fan club from 2022. Said we kind of already retired it, but it's dead now, sadly. But it was good to have him while we had him.
Hey, the Stewarts have committed to Georgia Tech thoroughly, and the fact that Gavin spanned, I believe, two coaches and was recruited by Paul before Jeff got here, that's a long time to stick with something to the point where you're getting, 2 degrees and all that as well. So, no shame in that.
Verified tech man. Hope he lands somewhere and can get some playing time. I want to talk about Aaron Filo for a second because I got sent some clips from some of his throws, and he had like a good back shoulder throw. He had a floater and everything. Like he, it, dude's only 17, so he ain't gonna play unless we're breaking glass in case of emergency or something like that. But Jackson, I was not there for this part, so like eye test wise, did Aaron pass with? How did that look? Because I know he looked amazing in the high school games in the earlier this year when he was playing state championships. But does it look like there's something there for real?
Yeah, for being in his first college anything, I would say him and Graham Knowles both looked pretty good. And they both had tough first drives. I think they both went three and out. I know Knowles almost got picked off his first drive. And then they started really getting into a rhythm. Philo played with Bailey Stockton at Prince Avenue. So like that was kind of a natural connection. I know Stockton had one-handed catch with that Philo threw to him, but he looked pretty natural and everything. I still look The nice thing for them is there is no pressure on them to do anything this year. You have Haynes King, you have Zach Pyron as a backup. There's no pressure on you to do anything. And the coaches have spoke highly of him. I know Key was asked about it after the game and how the freshman quarterbacks, he kind of like not wanting to not answer the question, but made sure like, hey, Zach Pyron played pretty well today, threw for like 180 yards too. So like everybody either wants to talk about the starter and the guy we know is pretty good, and then the true freshman. Like that's where usually the fascination is in terms of quarterbacks. But for his first college, I can't say college game, just for a
His
spring.
first live ball action in any
Yeah.
in a college football stadium.
It was pretty good. You just also have to factor in like he didn't face any blitzes, any pressure, anything like that. But for what it was pretty good.
No, I agree. In general, the trend that I picked up on is you can never have enough quarterbacks in football, and we might have three that could go in and play a game in a game right now, which is kind of incredible.
Well, I mean, think about it. Like just a couple of years ago, when the whole thing with Jeff Sims and then Zach Gibson got hurt, or Zach Pyron, broke his collarbone.
Pyron
Yeah.
then to Gibson.
Zach Gibson has to play those last two games, and it's like, okay, those scenarios can happen. And so you don't even have to go too far back to where it's possible. So like you don't want Aaron Filo to play, but like he looked pretty good. But again, you're a couple of years maybe away from really.
Hopefully he doesn't get portal jumped or something like that or whatever. It just it like
Jack, do not speak evil into existence
I'm
on
not
our fine
I'm
podcast.
speaking realism here because the portal does open tomorrow or today if you're listening to this on Tuesday. So I mean stuff happens. It's the Wild West out here right now. Jackson, any other guys or notes that come to mind of just in terms of just people maybe just keep in the back of our heads that may not be, but I'll say specifically in the defense. I think we know what the offense is going to be and what the what it's basically like we have a real quarterback, which means we kind of have a shot at any game we play in right now. But defensively, like that's going to be the question this year is can we stop the run? Is how the corner's doing all that kind of stuff. So any other notable guys there?
Well, I mean, you have the ones I mentioned. Like I said, the linebacker spot, I would pencil in Eifert for one of those, and then you'll have the other guys duking it out for that one spot. The secondary, I think, has a chance to be the best part of it, which I don't know that will really surprise people. Clayton Powell and Lamiles Brooks have played a ton of football games. Warren Burrell played a ton of football games at Tennessee. He was a little banged up there, but if he's healthy, you've got a guy with plenty of experience. Amari Harvey made plenty of plays last year, whether it's a North Carolina UCF bowl game. To me, it's the biggest question, and you definitely weren't going to find an answer about Saturday's the pass rush. It's like your top returning guy, and I like Kevin Harris. He had one sack last year. Like that's there's a ton of questions about the defensive line and pass rush. And I would just say the edge spot specifically, because you've at least got some guys inside, whether it's Zeke, Horace Lockett, Ayo Tafasi, the transfer from Florida State. They picked one up from Penn State. His name's escaping me right now. And then Mekhi Scott. Like you have some of those guys, interchangeable pieces, but the defensive end, like I would just circle the edge position as the one that could determine how good the defense actually is. Because if you can't pressure the quarterback and if you have to blitz all the time, that's just not going to work too favorably.
No, it won't. And that it's easy to pick apart eventually. Like your secondary is not going to be able to bear the brunt of that entire load.
But like you were saying, the portal opens tomorrow, so there's a chance to go.
It does feel like anything can kind of happen. Sadly, with where the state of college football is, I'm sure the Tech way is going to be open for business tomorrow in some form or fashion, when it all comes down to it. Jake, any last second thoughts on football? Are we doing trivia now or doing that later?
We could do trivia now. Jackson, you're of course welcome to hang around the entire show, but given that I like to make sure our guests get in on my.
Let's do the well. We're doing football. It's a football question, so let's do it with the football segment.
It is a football question, and we haven't done a football question in a long time. So I thank everyone for bearing with us in the meantime while we talked about ancient tennis results. But I've got a very simple question today. I want you guys to take a guess. Who does Georgia Tech have the most ties against all time?
Okay.
A result that is no longer possible.
So. Right. Are you able to? I don't remember the year that they eliminated the tie. I feel like it's more recently than you think, though. Am I correct in saying that? Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
That's my first thought, man. I want to say maybe North Carolina, because didn't they tie them in 1990?
Ooh, they did tie them in 1990. That is one of the three ties against North Carolina. North Carolina's three ties are even with Vanderbilt, Furman, Alabama, as the four teams with three ties. That is good for fourth place. There are three teams above that group of four.
Wow. Okay. Can you give us?
I'm going to say two of them are super obvious. Okay. Number one is not.
Number one is not. Okay. So what? Clemson? Something like that?
Clemson, like they've only tied twice. Keep in mind, Georgia Tech went a couple long stretches in the tie era, right, not playing every year.
Right. Good point. Auburn?
Auburn is number three. They've tied Auburn four times. The all-time record is 41, 47, and four.
Okay. I mean, our not-so-friends out east is the last feels-like easy answer here there, too. Okay.
Number two, 41, 69, and five all-time.
Five. And we're not going to – and so this – number one is weird. Okay.
I'm going to let you twist in the wind.
Define weird
for just a little
here.
Bit long.
Define weird here.
It's weird because if you think along the lines of the last two teams that you've named, it's not weird at all. But they also haven't been on our schedule in 50 years or, 40 years or something like that. So.
Okay.
South Carolina?
Uh-uh. The other one.
Oh.
What, Furman?
Uh-uh.
Wait, no.
Wait, we said them already.
In my head because we already said them. Yeah.
I got excited. I was like, you got a different one. No, we just talked about that 2 minutes ago.
No, okay. Wait.
It's the closest SEC school, I believe, to Auburn, but do not quote me on that.
It's not. Well, Bama's the closest one, but it's not Bama. So what, Vanderbilt?
Uh-uh.
No, well, that's the closest. Those are the closest ones to Auburn.
Really? I thought this other one, which is located in the SEC East, might be closer.
What the, Florida?
Florida.
Wow.
Georgia Tech all time is 24-9-6 against Florida. They have six ties all time.
That is wild. Okay.
Isn't that weird? What an odd coincidence. They just happen to have done that six times against Florida in like a third or a quarter of the attempts that they've had against Georgia or Vanderbilt.
That's
or
hilarious.
Not Vanderbilt, Auburn, it's very strange.
If anyone wants to look further to avoid reading results, that all this information is available in the Football Media Guide, just control F Florida and it'll show up at somewhere.
yes.
So that's how you find that information. That's how I find information quickly about weird stuff while Jake's things loads. Okay. I think any last thoughts on football before we hit me and Jake's softball diatribe that might last 3.5 hours?
Nope. I mean, last thing I was going to say is I am swamped with work. I will have to leave y'all after football, but y'all do such a great job here. I always appreciate it. And like I said, I was not a part of the Georgia Tech ecosystem when I came on this podcast. So I appreciate you having me. I know I'll see Jack around. I hope to see Jake around as well at some point as well.
Jake is around
as
all the
always.
Time. You're welcome to our football tailgates on IC lawn anytime before a game.
I was going to say that's the more common place to find me on a game day than in the press box. But but it was great having you. And if you ever have a hot button topic that you really want to hash it out with boys here, you're always welcome. So
y'all are my first call.
Got it.
Appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Jackson. All right, softball. Let's start before we get to the weekend series. We had the redemption win over Alabama State. A 9-0 five inning, just absolute thrashing. Not much to say about that outside of the fact of that was not a game we won last year, and that game went as it should have this year. So it's good for that. But this was the great Grant weekend, in a way.
Yeah.
In Louisville,
if you could say it.
As we've mentioned, if you listen to our summer episodes, that we had Jake's sister Maddie on last summer because she plays third base for Louisville softball team, and that episode was about visiting players' perspective coming to Atlanta and playing at Tech. So it was the one time he had actually will allow Jake to wear red and black. Not that we're giving him permission; he's just gonna do it.
It felt so weird, man. Like I'm gonna say, like I was at the ACC Big Ten Challenge last year, 2023, Georgia Tech and Louisville. I guess Louisville technically counted as a host because the ACC site hosted.
Yeah.
But I was there. I was wearing Louisville stuff, but they weren't playing Georgia Tech. It felt very strange. I don't like it. I don't plan on doing that again. but yeah, no, it's a one-time dalliance. It's not a permanent thing. I'll tell you that.
I was sitting with you in the on Friday night when Maddie got her first at bat and smoked that double off of Sophia, and you were very enthusiastic. So it didn't seem like you were really holding back against rooting against Tech. But that's a special moment right there.
Jack, I root for my sister because I love her and care about her.
I know, fact. But you did just say it felt weird. So just pointing out that
it did. I'm allowed.
It was a cool moment to see. That game on Friday, Tech had a pretty good, solid win there. 8-0 win with Sophia Boyles throwing a complete game shutout. It had a couple three-run homers, one by Sarah Beth Allen, where it looked like she flicked, where she just hit a ball that nearly hit O'Keefe on the fly, or the ROTC building hit a tree and one hopped it. So pretty easy win there. Saturday, a little bit worse, 4-1 loss. People were getting on base. But I talked to Hunter Bunch after the game, and basically it boiled down to Louisville had an upspin pitcher, and Tech just doesn't face that often, and it just was a not having the experience to adjust to it that well. They were fouling a lot of pitches off that were going too high. Basically just a weird hitting day. Kinsey Norton pitched that game, set her career high, single game career high with 7 Ks, and the team got 9 in the game. And then Sunday, my goodness, you were at the full game on Sunday because this was a tense one. 5-3 win on a walk off homer by Mallory Black, which had me jumping for joy when I saw that.
I'm not about to say that I'm a genius here or anything like that, but this series played out almost exactly as I prognosticated, and I just want that firmly on the record. These two teams came in very evenly matched. I did think Tech had the slight edge in pitching just with Voiles. I know, not an I think, I feel. I know that the strike zone was a bit wonky at times this weekend.
The third
game should have ended much earlier than it did. I'm gonna leave that at that. Well, and I mean, I guess you change one thing, butterfly effect, yada yada yada. But the third game could very and should very well have been a Louisville a win, or at least close to it. But in the end, it was a game that really did not go the visiting team's way in the first game. I think that's being charitable to the Cards. They had one hit, and it was that double. and then the second game, the upspin got him. Alyssa's a good pitcher. I think Louisville has really seen some good success from her. They took that second game to even it up, and then the third game played really close the entire way. Louisville had a little bit more power, which I wasn't expecting, but it was a lot of solo home runs, and Tech had a really, really timely double. I think that was Madison Dobbins.
Yep, that was Dobbins. Yep.
Maybe
yep.
I know there were two outs. There might have been two strikes too, but just to really battle in that at bat and win it with a bases clearing double, for the most part, defense was pretty good both ways. I think it would not be I'd be remiss not to mention Jin Soleo's insane swim move
Oh my goodness,
into Daisy Hess at sec. And I don't think Daisy thought that she got her. I think she knew that she got caught on that because they almost didn't review it. But it, I mean, you know, late in a really tight game. I mean, you don't get to go home with your challenges. So I don't blame Louisville at all for reviewing that. But that was, I mean, it was so quick. It looked unnatural. I don't know how she pulled that off in a,
It
it.
was amazing.
Like that's why I thought they got the tag down because her arm popped up so fast that it looked like that was in. But honestly, a really well played series. I think it lived up to the at least my mental hype, if you will. I've been tearing myself up about this for weeks, months, ever since the last time they played 2 years ago, you know. But no, the it I think it really played out well for both teams. They're both you know, right on that bleeding edge of, you know, I guess tournament consideration. They both more than anything needed to not get swept. And I think that's spiritually where I was at in the oh gosh, like more than I want to see teams win, I desperately want to see them not lose. Which is just such a weird, like there, never again, once this scenario is out of my life, will I ever feel that way again about a team. Like pro sports, the Cubs will always be my team. The Blackhawks will always be my team. Georgia Tech is my college team. There has never been or never will be a Jake case like this again. So for those people who claim to have multiple teams out there that you support, one, I don't know how you do it, and two, I don't trust you. I don't think you can handle this on a regular basis every year forever. So good luck with that.
I don't know. Having family members be in your in your sporting world that you follow after you started following it, I'm sure is just such a weird place to be in. So maybe one day I'll get there. We'll see. Yeah, so 2-1 series win. I mean, yeah, it ultimately was, I mean, was a both teams needed to win the series. Neither could afford to get swept. But if someone did sweep, oh boy, that was going to be a huge boost to their resume. And so it's it, this was of the best scenarios Tech had on hand, and of probably the more likely scenarios on hand that they had in front of them as well, just considering they were the home team as well.
Yeah.
A hitting note,
Last bats helped a lot.
last at bats helped a lot. Oh my goodness, yeah. Hitting notes. At this point, we have, I got this from Anthony Brandt, the team's SID today. Tech has 30 more homers at this point in the season than they did in an entirety of last year, which is the highest improvement so far of anyone in D1. Second is Holy Cross with 25 more homers. But here's the thing. We've got 78 right now. Holy Cross is 39. We've literally doubled
Jack,
them.
I got a question and or way too early. Oh man, I forgot the hot take I had about the spring game.
Oh, well.
Darn, maybe at the end, we'll see. But way too early nomination for Georgia Tech, like coach, staff, some
Oh, it's not even
contributor
close.
person of the
It's not
year,
even close.
Hunt,
It's Hunter.
Hunter Bunch,
It's Hunter
like
Bunch, and it's not even close. It's not even close. Yeah.
It's insane. Like, and I say this as usually I think it's easy for a Tech fan, and we will get to the baseball team in just a second because I've got some very similar points made. It is very easy for a Tech fan to be like, doom and gloom. What's going on? Blah, blah. Like, I thought this would play out like this or this like that. You put on the independent other person hat, and you look at that lineup, and it is terrifying, top to bottom. And they can't even get, you know, every person they would expect to have in that lineup every day in the lineup. Like
On Friday's
it is
game,
inc
by Friday's
oh
game,
go yeah.
1 through 7, we're all hitting 300 or higher.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And trust me, I heard about that from the people sitting around me. Yeah, I like it was a good dose of perspective for like hey, this team is markedly improved at the plate. And I think the biggest difference, or at least the reason it hasn't quite clicked, is I feel like they've just been like a critical hit or two away from winning a number of these games where it's like, oof, those couple LOB really hurt. They're, like there's a couple points you can single out from maybe like an Auburn, one of the like the tight Syracuse game, you know, things like that where, you know, it and that's the plight of the being a like edge of the bubble type type team is that you wind
You know you're like two or three extra bases away from there's your reality changing. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh yeah, and that's I mean, I'm gonna be candid with the numbers. The game I most wish we had back is Minnesota because they're living right in that exact same neighborhood.
Oh man,
and that's why the series against Louisville's really notable too, because at least in the latest USI, I have Tech and then Grand Canyon, who's figures to be an auto bid, and then Minnesota and then Louisville. And they're all right in that neighborhood, right around Indiana, who Louisville's played close this year, Nebraska, who I believe Indiana's played close this year. You know, it's like differentiating from those five, six teams. I think South Florida's right in that mix too. And there's mutual games among those teams too, where it's like,
yeah.
How do you make that decision, right? It's going to be, it's where taking the series against Louisville helps in that regard.
Big time,
too,
big time. Know? I'll note South Florida's, we're 52 in RPI. South Florida right behind us at 53. They've played a couple extra games than us. They've got 30 wins. We're at 28 wins right now. We're right behind Michigan and Louisiana Tech in that regard. Louisiana Tech, a team we played recently.
Louisiana Tech also an auto bid, so they don't figure quite as into the head-to-head spot consideration as well, unless they get their bid stolen. So
Louisville is 47th in RPI. Granted, this is not the all end all be all stat here, but just noting where our peers are that we've been comparing ourselves to. And Troy's at 57, Notre Dame 58. Our next opponent, Virginia Tech, 23.
Virginia Tech's good.
Virginia Tech, very good. Virginia
Tech's
good
for
very
a long
good.
Time too.
They really have been. I think I want to note. I get your point about like getting those extra bases. Left on base was a massive issue for us last year, and in a massive way, we have solved that problem by hitting so many more dingers and giving us more chances to be on base. And which is a weird way to close the loop on that. It's like, well, we were on base 20 times. We're hitting a bunch of homers to make up for it, but yet we're still just at the very end, still leaving too many people on base to really shore up our life in the tournament or in the ACC or whatever. So it's an interesting spot to be in. Our 78 homers have us fourth, pretty squarely in fourth there. Miami of Ohio's got like 113 with fewer games. I don't know how the hell they are hitting so many freaking home runs, but they are. Virginia Tech, we play next, second in the country with 90 something. Pitching
that
wise,
spooks me a lot.
Yeah,
that spooks me a lot. And I know you're about to go into the pitching, but that's exactly why.
Well, I think that's a good segue because Kinsey Norton's a ground ball pitcher. She had her highest strikeout day ever. Sophia Voiles was pretty much on lockdown minus like one inning in that second game against Louisville. Initially on Friday, Chandler was going to start. They switched that to Voiles. Seemed like that was a good call. But then Chandler pitched well on Sunday and only allowed one earned run. So it seems like hopefully this Kinsey Norton started on Saturday and this Chandler Dennis started on Sunday were emblematic of something that they can carry into this next series, because we're going to need to pitch as good as we've pitched all year to get through Virginia Tech. That's just how it's going to be. When Georgia Tech, I should say, plays these really, really good teams, play or go against them, anytime they face these really good teams, that's usually where they stop winning. And they usually start losing by a lot and not playing that competitively. So that if they can get even one win out of this, that'd be such a massive, massive improvement from where we've been in the past.
Yeah. And I would argue that I don't want to say they need one. Obviously there's a lot that can happen between now and then, but if you want to put yourself in the position where you are playing yourself onto and then off of the bubble, getting a game or two against Virginia Tech, getting a game or two against Virginia, you know, those kinds of ACC teams are super important. And it's where like you're kind of at a point where you can't afford to lose in the first round of the ACC tournament. You know, you need to get that win and get a chance to get a season defining victory. And it, I mean, with how good this team has been at the plate, it would be a disappointment not to see them go to the big dance, but you know, that's why they play out the rest of the slate. And right now I think it's just that they're a big win or two away, but they've got a really big opportunity to get one or two of those this weekend. I don't think that can be overstated.
Getting one or two would be massive because as of now, we are in a three-way tie for fourth in the ACC at 11-7 with Clemson and Virginia. Virginia Tech's at 14-4, so it'd be a mirror. It would take a sweep to catch them, and that'd be quite a sweep if we did. Honestly, considering you're facing Virginia Tech and that Clemson just exists, Probably not going to be tied for fourth when it's all said and done at the end of the weekend. But that is, we're playing for, I mean, at this point, we're playing for somewhere in the 4-6 range for a seed and doing what we can there. Our 28 wins are, everyone in this band also has 28 wins. We played the most games with 3 extra losses compared to Clemson. So yeah, we Georgia State's on Tuesday, is today, Tuesday. Then the weekend at all, both these are road games. Granted, Georgia State's just in Panthersville, so not that far away. And then Virginia Tech is farther away in Blacksburg. So any last thoughts here before we move on?
Yeah, man, I don't know. I think I walk away from this weekend thinking that both teams are pretty much exactly where we think they would be based on where they were coming into it. I think that both teams are still in search of defining wins. I think Georgia Tech has really good opportunity to make something happen, but it's going to require, how do I put this? I don't think that you can take a Virginia Tech team to regulation with only three, or through the end of regulations with only 3 runs to your name. I think they're going to be big bopping hitting the ball. And I don't know how much this comes into play, but they are also up in the mountains too. So, you know, if you're going up against a team that's hitting a lot of home runs, going to their park, and a team that's been super successful going to their park, it's going to be definitely a challenging experience. But again, that's why you play the games, and this could be, you know, a real momentum boost if they take advantage of that. Also, beware, if you sit on the first baseline, you won't notice the back of your neck burning if you're used to sitting on the third baseline at Mewborn. That is the other thing I learned this weekend.
Yeah, this will be big. A win will do so much good. So much good. So we'll see how it pans out. They had a lot of good barrel contact this weekend. So if you keep good barrel contact in the elevation, that should translate pretty well. Okay, baseball. A very football-esque series win that they've now done against Virginia Tech and North Carolina State, and that they're just weirdly beating the ranked teams but can't do crap against anybody else. The 2-1 series. No, barely. 2-1 series.
They won 19-0 on Saturday.
You get the idea. 2-1 series win over Virginia Tech, the number 16 team in the country, after losing 11-1 on Friday, then won 19-0 on Saturday, and then 11-7 coming from behind win on Sunday. None of us had this coming at all. We did all this without Drew Burris having to hit any homers. That 19-0 game, a couple notes before I let Jake go, because I know he's got a lot on this. We walked 19 times in the game. That ties the program high set in 1978 against a school called Hope. Jake, why is Hope interesting?
So Hope is pretty interesting, and it's emblematic of this weird end of independence era Georgia Tech sports. It happened the most in baseball. You'd notice women's sports weren't too much of a known topic then, and these individual matchups in baseball were kind of hard to come by. So if you look at these media guides, you see Hillsdale and Calvin and Hope and Denison, Grinnell, you know, these Midwest D3 mostly schools, populate these media guides. And the thing about Hope and also Calvin is they come from the southwest corner of Michigan, and they're two like very small Presbyterian schools that are basically like the equivalent of like Notre Dame or BYU, where it's just like, you know, small, well, I guess not so small for Notre Dame or BYU, but you get the idea. Like it's a very different type of school to Georgia Tech. And not only that, it's a very different type of like athletic department to one that we play now. So seeing it anywhere on our media guides, especially somebody who grew up a Midwestern Presbyterian, is a little bit interesting to me. You know, I mean, it's weird. It's sports. It's the same reason it's weird to see that we've got like historical results against like that milk factory in basketball.
The milk factory, you know? The USSR, all these crazy things.
Yeah, exactly.
Cam Jones pitched a 7-inning shutout in that 19-0 win. Only allowed 3 hits, 6 strikeouts. So a legitimately good pitching performance. Behind the best hitting performance we put up, or one of the best we've ever put up. Matthew Ellis hit a grand slam. Brocious and Burris both hit doubles. Burris had a 4-hit day. Only 3 RBIs somehow in the middle of all this. But yeah, they just kept... You can't win if you walk 19 batters. That's just how that works. Them's the axioms of baseball. But then on Sunday, came back from behind an 11-7, which was really nice. John Giesler had a big old homer. in that game. We were down 7-0 after four innings and then scored 11 unanswered, six runs in the sixth inning. So it was all like all in the final third of the game, pulling that one to get very needed win.
And that's the thing, too, is about a third of the way into game three, I was thinking, hey, you guys have had a lot of runners on. Like, I think Virginia Tech was only leading the hit count by one or two. They just weren't very timely. And there's two axioms right here. They're both very opposite. One is, oh, and now Virginia Tech has now figured us out after this, and we have just squandered all of those opportunities. Or it's the, no, Georgia Tech is onto something, and something's going to click here at some point where they stack them up a little bit. Yeah. And in this case, it was the latter. It was a sixth spot, I believe, in the fifth, and then Giesler's home run came in the sixth. If not, those were both one inning later. But yeah, they came all the way back. It was just a matter of lining things up. It felt like early in the game they couldn't keep the ball in the yard from the Hokies, but you know, coming in and slamming the door, I don't know how much else you could ask for. And I think if the bullpen can continue to do things like that, the baseball season is very much not over. They're no, seven and eight in conference, which, you know, you'd like that to be a little bit higher, but you got a couple weekends left. They play 30 games. Like, you're halfway through that. You've got a good Auburn team that you're going on the road to face this week. Always worth noting. You've got a very good top 10 Virginia team that you're going to pay a visit to this coming weekend. Kennesaw, I believe, is in the hunt for the A-Sun in their last year in the A-Sun that they've got at home after that. And then you've got Miami, Clemson, who is extremely spooky. You've got Auburn at home. You've got Duke, Mercer, and Florida State. And you know, we don't have to put too many carts in front of too many horses here. But let me just tell you, Jack, that there are a number of those names at the top of this fine here ranking of mine.
Yeah, so. I'm looking at the ACC standings right now, and you just only named the teams that are leading or about near leading the divisions here in the ACC. Clemson, top of the Atlantic at 11-4. Florida State, second behind Clemson, 10-5 in the Atlantic. Virginia is tied for second in the Coastal at 11-7. North Carolina is leading that at 14-4. We are 7-8, as you said, in the Coastal, which puts us fifth. Coastal chaos sadly does not exist in baseball. Not this year, at least. So we won't be getting any of that. But we are squarely in fifth. Miami's 6-12. We got a bunch of games in hand to spread away from Miami, at least on the win column side. And hopefully catch some other teams on the win column side. That'd be nice.
And I will say, D1 baseball, me, RP, whomever, basically everyone for the most part is in agreement that, you know, your Florida States and your Clemsons and your Virginias, well, most notably Virginia, because it's coming up this weekend, are top 10 caliber teams or close to it. So certainly, you know, if the baseball, the baseball bullpen keeps it up, how they were able to slam the door nicely against Virginia Tech and take care of business on Saturday. I know it's, you know, in the postseason, you got to, you know, you'd like to win every game, but it's win every weekend. And that'll put you in a nice position here in at this point in the year. Just to kind of run down pitching, six runs given up in one and a third for Tate McKee in the start, but then the bullpen combination of Ben King, Brett Barfield, Brett Thomas, and Dawson Brown combined to give up just one run. Ben King pitched one and a third. Brett Barfield gave up the run in his one inning. Brett Thomas, two and two thirds. Dawson Brown, two and one third. They scattered six hits among them. I mean, for a college bullpen, for this pitching staff, I will take eight innings of one run ball.
Yep, that's really good. I think what my head's coming to now is with all these really good teams we have to play, I think the thing to be on the lookout for, regardless of how good our guys are playing, is just like, this is the moment to build the resume to even put us in tournament contention. Like, it is now, or like, we are in these are the games. If it is not these games, that's it.
I'm going to pull a statement completely out of left field that I haven't researched at all, because I know you can look this up. I just can't remember where. Georgia Tech could if they play their cards right, and this is a, sweep every weekend left on the table type comment, not a win every weekend on the table type comment, but it is theoretically possible for them to be very comfortably in
Oh, yeah.
the ACC and NCAA,
No, I mean, they've got 1, 2,
two
3,
borderline
4, 5,
one
6, 7, 8,
type
9, 10,
talk.
11,
But
12. Yeah.
that is the most pie in the sky. I use that as an intro to say I have them as the last team in right now. Go
Oh, boy.
figure. They are going to need to find some wins here
Yeah.
somewhere in the next few weeks, though. You can't just lose every weekend from here out. There's
We've got,
five. There's
yeah.
a lot of baseball left, and it's a tenuous existence on the razor's edge of being in the tournament or not, especially when there's, almost every ACC and SEC team in conversation for an at-large bid. Like that, you have to differentiate yourself
We
somehow
have
against those other 11 teams. So
15 games remain against ACC teams. You got to win. I don't know. I actually don't know. I don't know how many of these games you got to win. It's going to be relative to everybody else to keep that tournament slot. But as you said, like it's going to take real winning to shore up. We're this number 64 team in the tournament as we're projecting right now. That's you have literally no wiggle room. So because you can only go if you go down, you're out. So yeah, win now. It is a win now. It's always a win now mentality. But like you got to win now.
at this point in the year, the ACC pencils out as the best league in the country, and I don't think that
Right.
my
Yeah. I mean,
numbers lie in saying that. Like,
it'd be real
I,
interesting
yeah.
how, what are, like, if we play in any other conference, like, how we're talking about this team. Like, if we're playing, if we're a big, well, I don't know if Big Ten's any good at baseball, but if we're in any of those others, I figured
They
out.
are not good at
I'm just
baseball.
imagining everything where there's snow, they're not good at baseball. But any of the
That's a good
Southern.
rule of thumb.
All right. Great. All right. Glad I got that one right. Yeah. I mean, any of these other Southeastern Southern conferences that stretch between here and Cali, like, I imagine it'd be a much different conversation, but this is where we are. And we'll
It is
see.
indeed.
This is where we are. And based on the news coming out of Florida and Florida State and Clemson for the ACC, who the hell knows what's going to be happening in the next few years? Okay, my goodness.
And
We just went like an hour doing so much stuff. And we'll finish up pretty quickly after here. But let's take a break here and hear about some laundry.
I think that this is a great time to segue. Again, I know I've said this a couple times. Drew Burris jersey. It's springtime. Go check that out. But if that's not up your alley, or you've already bought like eight on our recommendation, go check out the other baseball and softball related items at section 103. The jackets, script, shirt looks great. And the three-quarter sleeve with the navy is a great classic piece of Georgia Tech apparel. I, however, am partial to this Tech Zip hoodie inspired by the very, I guess it'd be a color swap, but the very same layout that Georgia Tech was sporting in their fine Sunday gold uniforms that they were wearing yesterday for their comeback win. And that is just $59 at section 103.com. I literally wear mine all the time, so I cannot recommend it highly enough. As always, check them out at section 103.com and at section 103 on Twitter.
Golf balls. That is what we're talking about next. The Calusa Cup was where Tech played, and but without Christo Lamprecht, because critically he was playing in Augusta, Georgia at the Masters, where he sadly did not make the cut, did not get low amateur. But we did have a moment that I'm just not going to forgive Jim Nantz for. Jake, do you want to take a gander at what he may have said on the broadcast?
Oh no, he said Georgia Tech University, didn't he? Is
He
this why Angel
sure did.
Cabrera was tweeting about that this
For
weekend?
it sure is why Jim Old Nance said Georgia Tech University. F minus for Nance, A plus for everybody else.
Love
Because
Jim Nantz, though. Oh,
it
darn.
was a fun tournament. It was Uncle Vern's last time calling it at 16, and that was great. There's the hilarious picture of Tiger Woods shaking Uncle Vern's hand, except you can't see Uncle Vern; he's behind a tree. So Tiger Woods is shaking a tree. Just punny.
The Wes Blankenship tweet that was like Tiger handshake meme Woods,
Yes, yeah,
that was good
very
stuff.
ideal stuff there. But I'm sure Christo had the time of his life out there in Augusta, and it was great for him to be out there. And he got to play with Erik van Rooyen and Gary Player and Charles Schwartzel between the par 3 contest in his round. So he got to play with all the other South Africans, and getting to do a Masters thing with Gary Player is once in a lifetime. So I'm glad he got the chance to do that. In terms of what Tech did at the Calusa Cup, it was a hard tournament. Only one team finished under par, and that was our old nemesis, the Florida Gators. It went 3 under. Tech finished fourth in a 8-team field, which consisted of the Gators, Purdue, Wake Forest, us, the Athens School, Miami of Ohio, Iowa, and Nebraska. It was pretty much the top three of Florida, Purdue, and Wake Forest, who all finished between 3 under and 5 over, and then the rest of the field. We were one shot ahead of Georgia at 19 under. They were 14 under. Bartley Forrester and Aiden Tran both finished tied 12th. Massive asterisks on this because Christo's not playing, simply. Christo's been just absolute reliable guy. He's the number one player in college right now. And when you don't have your number one guy in a very individual sport, you're not going to do as well. That's simple as that. So I don't think there's anything major to really worry about here, considering ACC championships are next. You put Christo out there and things change. So, and we're going to need that to defend our ACC title this coming weekend in Charlotte, North Carolina. I think my only thing I really want to talk about here is they haven't exactly shown like pure dominance week over week this year. This whole season, they've been like absolutely in the hunt, had guys do really have great rounds, be near the top of leaderboards. But like Tech as a team has not taken over a tournament like other teams have that they've played in.
No, they've just kind of been chilling almost. I know that that's not how they would describe it, but I feel like Georgia Tech is a team that we're quite used to seeing come home with a piece of silverware, at least at some point during the year. And they're running out of time to do that.
Yep.
Now, if I was going to say, hey, Jake, would you rather their one, you know, tournament win all year be something or ACC/NCAA tournament? I'd take the latter, but I think they're pretty competent. They're certainly a team that can play their way into, you know, the match play type portion of the NCAA tournament, and certainly one I expect to at least be in the mix for that top four match play segment of the ACCs. But I don't know. It's not quite the same like the world on fire, taking names type situation that we've seen in the past. But hey, a high level of competence is still a high level of competence, and a, you know, approximately yeah, top 15 rating coming into the end of the year with you know, their best player literally playing in the most famous golf event in the entire world. You know, this team's doing all right. I don't know. I don't see them as they're certainly not the odds on favorite in the ACC championship coming up here in a couple of days, but do I think they could, you know, play their way into a chance to win it? Sure. I just need to see it and
they, yeah,
you know,
they got
it just
the talent
needs to happen. You know?
They got the talent. It's a lot of the same team. They don't have Connor Ho this year, but it's still a lot of the same dudes. And Aiden, I mean, all, you know, Hiroshi Tai has been playing great all season. Krista, of course, Bartley's been up and down, but mostly up. But it's gonna take Kale. It's gonna take Kale Fontenot and Kramer or whoever ends up being the scoring guy to not be a high, not be the fourth, but pulling, but dragging us down kind of situation. Like they're gonna need to really score and do well. But yeah, as in most other sports, the ACC is just absolutely loaded. So these ACC titles are not cheap. They do not come cheaply. They put the work in. So this will be, we'll see if we can defend. Yeah. This is the only active conference title we have right now. So it'd be very nice to keep it with our,
yes,
with the best team we've got on campus right now. So that is this Saturday. This was televised last year. I believe it'll be televised again this year. They start on Friday. I believe it's Friday. Definitely going to be on Saturday and Sunday. Yeah, starts Friday, 9 a.m. They do a team portion before they go into match play. So that will start 9 a.m. Friday. Rounds 1 and 2. Saturday will be round 3. So they're going to play 36 holes on Friday. And then Saturday is just round 3, and then match play is going to be Sunday and Monday. So it'll be a Monday afternoon finish if they make the final.
Per the ACC website, the one I am seeing for, I guess, TV-related stuff is Monday, April 22nd, 7:30 a.m. on ACC Network Extra. So that would be the semifinal and championship match play.
Great.
So the match is on TV. Sadly, it does not look like stroke play will be on television. But
all right,
hey,
it.
That'll make for some Monday content, at least.
That will indeed. So lay the stage here, NCAA regionals, we are pretty much in that. We don't have to win the ACC title to still not make the NCAA regionals, correct?
Well, a lot of teams make the regionals. It's strange. Golf and I guess cross country slash track are two of the closest teams to, or closest sports to, like a quarter or a third of the field making it. As more schools have joined Division One, it is harder to make the baseball and basketball postseason than it used to be. It's just more teams are in the field and whatnot. So I think they're pretty comfortably in a regional. It's just you got to finish top five to go to the Natty.
As a top 15 team, and we have been all season. Yeah, we're gonna be in the at least the first phase of the national
This won't be the
competition.
last time the last weekend we see them this year. It's just a matter of if we get two more times.
Right. Don't put.
Right.
Yeah. Don't. The season is not over after ACCs, but please win the thing. Just do it. Okay. Men's
Agreed.
tennis, number 29th. Men's tennis. Honestly, on both tennis sides, there's not much to really report here. The men beat Virginia Tech in their first match of the weekend. They were supposed to, and they did quite easily, 5-2. Then they played the number three team in the country, Virginia, and got summarily demolished 7-0, which is not exactly out of the line of very reasonable possibilities for how that match was going to go down. Singles were not particularly close, and doubles was not really. Only Chopra and Chakri put up a fight in doubles, but at that point, it didn't matter because we'd already lost the other two. So Andres at least had a good first set against Chris Rodesh. Andres is right now the number 11 singles player in the country, and Chris Rodesh, his opponent at UVA, is number 7. He lost 7-2 in a tie break in the first set, and then went down 6-4 in the second set. And we only won. Chris Aurora was the only. Oh no, we did not win a single set. Okay, yeah, we got smacked. All right, well.
Yeah, that played out about as expected. I dropped by that one for a little bit this weekend. I was like, okay, I see.
Yeah, it's like that. So, this is the big ACC championship week in the state of North Carolina. The men's and women's tennis ACC titles are this weekend as well. The men are the number 7 seed. They're going to place Louisville to start and hopefully move on from there. The women, number 24 right now in the country. They lost to number 12 North Carolina State 5-2. They got the doubles point at least, given Roach Alexander Cruz won their match, and then as well as Kylie Bilchev and Scarlett Nicholson in a tiebreak. But in singles, North Carolina State's pretty loaded. They got the number 5 player and Amelia Radecki, number 69, and Abigail Rancelli, and number 53, and Anna. Oh, that's a Russian name, Zirinova. Carol Lee got pretty much smacked 6-1, 6-4. It was very similar to how that UVA match went, just losing all of the sets because North Carolina State's really good. Then we played Wake Forest, beat them 6-1, as we should have. So it was a very much on our weekend for tennis, both sides. For the women, though, they're the number 5 seed, so they actually get a bye, and they're going to face the winner of Clemson or Boston College in their, I guess, the second round of the ACC tournament, but in their first match of the tournament. So I don't think much has changed here, Jake. Carol Lee and Kate Shirabura are still number 11 in the country. They're going to be the players to watch. Andres Martin, of course. Hopefully, he can get some single stuff done, but this is still a team event in the end for the ACCs. So it's not like we're going to have when we get to ACC NCAA time where we're talking about Carol and Kate going through a doubles bracket or something like that.
Yeah, I think both of these played out just about as you imagine. If you're either team, I think they're certainly the women, but honestly, the men are pretty comfortably an at-large team right now. If you think about just how many at-large spots there are, Massey has them about 30th in the country, and if you assume there's 32 at-large spots, and I think I counted 8 conference winners or conference leaders in front of them. Yeah, they should be probably about a 3 seed in the tournament, and the women in as well. That said, don't lose to Louisville. Do not do that if you're the men.
Nope.
It's another opportunity to get a win in that nice W column. I know that we've said, I think this was last year when we were talking about them. It's one of those like, hey, like stack up the wins when you can get them, and don't give them all back. This year, I think they were pretty effective in stacking up the wins. They got a couple nice showings against some well-regarded teams, and a couple close 3-4 losses as well. All that to say, and all that rambling to say, 17-7 is a good spot. I prefer 18-8 to 18 or to 17-8. Just getting that one more, it really does make a difference. And tennis is all about the draw, right? If you can avoid UVA as long as possible.
Yes.
That
Yes.
is a good thing.
Yes.
But yeah, the ACC tennis is real spooky. It's going to continue to be spooky with the addition of Stanford and Cal next year, to be completely honest, but that's a next year problem. And then if you're the women, we've talked at length about Clemson and BC. So they await their next opponent, and a win would be incredibly needed for them as well. Kind of all that to say, if baseball and softball pick it up down the stretch, tennis, men's and women's both make it in. No, not too much of a return in basketball this year, but it could be a pretty solid showing, Director's Cup wise, all said, but just need to kind of hold serve in tennis here and finish strong in baseball and softball.
Yep. Man, if we're gonna have a summer episode, aren't we, when they officially join the conference, it's just about how, like, all these sports we're usually really good in, it just got way harder. That might be an analysis episode for us to do in the summer. Let's shift to volleyball, one of those sports that will totally be affected by the new teams coming into the conference. We have a new libero. Her name is Sophia Velez. It's a very similar story to how Paolyn Pimentel came to the team. She's a JUCO transfer from Trinity Valley Community College. She's originally from Tuluá, Colombia. She's will come in as a junior. She had the most digs over the last 2 years in all of junior college at 1523, about 5.6%. So we basically got the best libero available out of JUCO, which is kind of what we did with Paola as well. And she ended up being one of the absolute rocks of our team over the seasons that she played. They've set a bunch of records when she was out there. They've made national semifinals in the JUCO. She is the two-time JUCO Defensive Player of the Week. Bunch of digs. She's really good. Basically, just kind of the same track that Paola came. She's going to be the sixth international student on the 2024 roster with Bertolino Emiliano, Luana Emiliano, who we got from UT Rio Grande Valley, Larissa Mendez, Otunay, and Suarez. What the big thing here is that likely this just bumps Zoe Winfred out of any playing time again this year, sadly, because Lauren Sandin is legit. She's really good defensively. She played really well in the exhibition matches that I saw on campus. So I think Sandin is going to play, but Velez, I think, is going to also be a very critical part spot here. I know the team had said they want to get another middle blocker at some point this summer as well. So we'll see if there's another. I think there's a shot there'll be one more transfer portal signing before it's all said and done and we get to the fall. But it's still gonna happen. I don't know who's even on their radar. They don't say that stuff until it actually happens. So I just know that's been something they've been targeting, and that came out a long time ago. And it's obvious they gotta replace Smiley Manyang somehow, and they just haven't yet. So that's the goal there.
And I believe that Georgia Tech has played and coached and developed well enough to the point where they can afford to be a little picky, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
I
Yeah,
don't
I agree.
know. Maybe that's me putting the cart before the horse, but
No, I think that's fair. I mean,
I
this is
trust them that they'll make that snag.
I mean, Michelle's got a 10-year track record to prove that whatever we do works. We've got multiple players playing volleyball internationally. Hopefully we'll have some play in the States, in the PVL coming up. Speaking of the PVL, the Atlanta Vibe qualified for the postseason. They are on track to win the whole damn thing, actually. Which is cool. Then lastly, they did have an exhibition. Volleyball did play exhibition in Florida this past weekend. No results there that the team had on hand for me. But Bogridge is, they said that she did not play, and they just generally just not having her do live action whilst just to make sure that knee does not get re-aggravated in any way possible, because as we talked about for so many hours and I wrote about in so many words, this team is different without Liv Mogridge, and so they need to make sure she is there as healthy as possible come the real games in August. And I think the next time we'll talk about volleyball is either I trying to get an interview with them at some point to talk about the spring, but the real next news bits will be if they get a signing in the transfer portal in this summer, or when the schedule releases after Stanford and Cal and SMU join the conference. So I assume we're not going to get a schedule until like maybe closer to like June or something like that. I know we've already got football and basketball, but that's my hunch there. So that's
Yeah,
that.
it's pretty in line with historic results, I'd say.
Yeah. Jake, you got track and field, or do I have track and field?
Yeah, I can grab track. I've got them in front of me. It was a split weekend. I believe all three news articles had concluded in the title, so I may have misarranged these, so you could hop in
I think it's
if
fine.
I'm
I don't.
saying the 3 days out of order. But
Who cares? Who cares?
we had a couple of notable finishes out in California that included a couple of, I guess, close to podium finishes. It was a lot of distance running out in California, I noticed. I believe Kate Jorberg was our top finisher out there in the 10K. She got seventh. In addition, they also ran the 5K out there. Charlie Smith and Mary Brady ran that along with Helena Lindsay. Helena Lindsay was a fifth place finisher there, so pretty solid in terms of just solid finishes, long events. I'm interested to see that they did go that far. I feel like one of our old tropes on this podcast, it's like, oh, it's winter season, they're always in Vanderbilt or Clemson. But even in the spring, you got the two tech home meets, you got Florida, you got Raleigh, Penn relays, pretty classic Tom Jones, pretty classic set of results there. So the going out to the clay invite in California was pretty interesting. But yeah, in terms of the Tom Jones, that was down in Gainesville. Aaron Fegans finished in fourth in the 5,000 meter there. So interesting to see it was held in both split squad locations. The 3,000 steeplechase, Cole Miller finished third, and Matt Castanovu finished fourth. Nice to see that 3-4 there. Long jump, we had a fourth and fifth place selection there as well. Amisa Wilson on the women's side, Cameron O'Neill on the men's. Cole Miller finished third in the 3,000 steeplechase. So really, really solid. Or wait, I said that already. Whoops. But
No,
really,
it's
really
fine. Fine.
solid to see the top fives around there. And I think there was a couple on the next day as well. If I'm remembering off the top of my head. Oh no, it was a sixth place finish, Anna Witherspoon. So 100 meter hurdles. So always nice to see some low numbers next to those names. Split squad, same events being competed in both locations makes it a little tough for the apples to apples. But at the very least, Georgia Tech track and field is being ranked at this time in terms of the polls and rankings that they put out for the outdoors. It's not exactly clear to me where and why they cut off certain spots where they do, but just to be in the mix is generally a good thing. I think it was 123 for Georgia Tech last week. They've kind of been in the mid hundreds for the men, and I believe a little bit higher for the women off the top of my head. So like I said, you want to at least be ranked. It doesn't rank everyone, but if you're out of it, that means you're below like 200 or 170. So good to be in the mix there for sure.
Pretty less. Well, all right. It's good to know. Actually, I didn't know that. So that's interesting. Okay. Let's very quickly wrap up with lacrosse and the Chirabundi Bowl before I gotta go turn on this WNBA draft, man.
Yes, it is high time to see where Caitlin Clark goes. Everyone will be shocked. But in the meantime, this weekend, lacrosse is headed down to Jacksonville for the SCLC semis and hopefully finals as well. They get Florida State. Tech is currently sitting 10th in the country. Florida State is sitting in 14th. That'll be 1 p.m. on Saturday. Follow along for live updates. Twitter usually really solid about that from GT Lacrosse. And then I am not exactly sure who the championship would be, but I presume it would be South Carolina versus Florida. Can't exactly remember 100% on that one because I'm not looking right at the bracket and I just pulled that one out on the fly. But this does come on the heels of an 18-11 solid victory at home, closing the home slate against Auburn in the quarter. So really shaping up nicely and winning the previous two games by a total of what is it, 41-22? That's
What?
not how math works. 31-22
Ah.
against two really solid teams are a good way to be playing going into the end here.
And lastly, Chirabundi Bowl. What is this? I don't know what this is.
So the Chirabundi Bowl is a event brought to you by the folks behind Every Day Should Be Saturday, the Shutdown Fullcast. Essentially, they raise money for New American Pathways. So us in the SB Nation and SB Nation alum extended universe do love supporting these guys for what they do. New America Pathways is a great Atlanta-based charity that helps refugee resettlement in and around Atlanta, but also, you know, the country. And EDSBS, I believe their target is 7 figures this year. Don't quote me on that. I listened on double speed, and I heard the word million, and I don't think they'd throw that around with lightning.
Let's just assume they did say that.
Yes, let's assume they did say that, but we do want to give them a shout out. Go check it out. I encourage you, if you feel so led, to support them. The initial goal is $500,000. I did check up on that while I was searching in the background, but really the point of the Charity Bowl is some good-natured competition between friendly universities. Michigan usually wins the thing by a lot. I expect that to continue in their charitable spirit following their natty. They shut down Fullcast and EDSBS team do a great job on that. And it's a organization that's important to us, Fulton and DeKalb County here, but also their effects on what they do around the globe. And, you know, you don't have to contribute $500,000 all on your own. A lot of these are, you know, the difference is made in the $10, $20, $30 at a time. And as is tradition, this is about friendly collegiate rivalries. So maybe a 28.27 score or whatever your favorite result from the year or over a rival in recent years would be a great way to theme that. I didn't plan to do this plug, but I got added in a tweet by friend of the pod and friend of the site, Will Secor, in the middle of recording this, and I was like, oh, this is a great idea. I definitely need to
to
mention this. So shout out Will, and thank you for the reminder there. And as always, shut down Fullcast and the team there do great work with this and also on their podcast content, but they're the internet's only college football content and podcast. So I guess this doesn't count.
Well, shout out to Will. Thanks for plugging us on that. Hey, you know what? I'm going to pull a fast one on you. I'm doing the outro this time. I got the reins. If you want to find us, we're at fromtherumbleseat.com. It's where all of our content is. We're going to be pushing it a little bit more recently. It's a little bit of a dead time here in spring. A lot of other stuff going on in life, so it's been a little slow, but hey, the podcast never stops. Our email is fromtherumbleseat.com if you want to email your mailbag questions or just ask us anything or email us. You can do whatever you want there. It's available. Our Twitter is FTRSblog. I am at Jack Nicholas. Jake is at JakeGrant98. You can find Section 103 at section103.com or at Section 103 on Twitter. You can listen to this podcast on any podcast app you want or on YouTube. The YouTube clip automatically goes up as well. Thanks again to Jackson Caldell for coming on the podcast and helping us get through the spring game, because Jake and I watched a combined very little of it and watched so much softball instead. So we needed the help, and we were so grateful he's there. You can find him All Yellow Jackets? All Yellow Jackets, that's right. And he puts up Fan Nation, puts up a bunch of stuff. He also does that for the Atlanta Hawks as well on the same platform. So if you need some Hawks content, he's got you there as well. I think that's everything. I'm going to go turn the NBA draft. Jake, it was good talking with you.
Good chat. Good night, sir.